This is a workshop speaker meeting. It is a women's wrap, and I would like to introduce our first speaker, Chris. Hi. My name's Chris, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Chris.
And I gotta go pee. Oh. No. No, I need to breathe. I need to just come into the room and be centered here. And thank you all for coming. I don't know why I'm getting so emotional about this. This makes me very nervous to come and to talk to people. And the funny part is I did it for a living. I could do it that way, and I can do it one-on-one. But when it comes to like a situation like this, I have a really difficult time kind of getting centered and getting my feet solid on the ground and feeling like I'm not an imposter. My clean date is 5/14/1995, which means in May I'll have 30 fucking years. Happen. 30 years. I haven't done anything else that long except for I have a son that's in his 40s, but that's not even gone that long. One day at a time, 1 hour at a time, 1 minute at a time, just don't use no matter what. And it's been up and down. I've had some crazy times. I've been divorced, I've lost my job, I've had parents die, and I didn't use no matter what. The biggest thing that's happened for me in this last, say, 8 years. Okay, let me back up a little bit. So part of my story is I'm adopted. I was adopted at 6 months old. I was in like a nursery or an orphanage for about 6 months after I was born because of some illnesses that I had. I was placed with a family at 6 months old that had another adopted child in that family, a male, and they were blonde-haired, blue-eyed people, and I am not. And in the summertime, I'm really not. I never want to speak ill of them because they did the best they could with what they knew and loved me the best they could and gave me a lot of things that today are a big part of me, like my morals and my higher power, all those things. That family, they have all since passed. My adopted father has passed, my adopted mother has passed, and my adopted brother has also passed. And how that relates is my adopted brother passed at 40 years old due to his addiction, and that's why I walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I told myself that this is what's going to happen to me by the time I hit 40. I want to live life differently. And I walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and I never went away. So even though that death was such a traumatic thing for me, it saved my life. It really did. So to kind of fast forward, yes, I was adopted about 8 years ago or so. I did a swab and did the ancestry.com, and I was contacted by two people. One was my biological father, who had no clue that I even existed. And the other was a daughter that I had relinquished at birth.
Oh, wow.
So you can only imagine how my world went upside down. So the relationship with my biological father is what brings me to Maryland, that brought me to Maryland at the beginning of the pandemic. And I've been here since. We created this relationship, and he has been nothing but supportive in creating this relationship. And I moved from a little town in, called Centralia, and between Centralia and Spokane, but in Washington State. I packed up everything I knew, everything I owned, and I moved here to Maryland. And I've been here since, and I'm not going anywhere. So there has been so much that came with that for me as far as learning. I learned that my adopted father was emotionally unavailable to me, and how that created survival skills for me and character defects for me. And today I understand how that affects the relationships that I've had with men. You know, as I look back, I remember thinking that I was supposed to be like June Cleaver. Yes, that shows my age. June Cleaver and the Brady Bunch and all the women, you know, that vacuumed with their pearls in their heels. And I thought that's, and doted on the man. And I thought that's how I was supposed to be. And I'd really like to file a class action lawsuit against those people for putting those ideas in my head and making me crazy all these years, because I could never live up to that image, that society, and what I saw. I could never live up to it, and I still can't. But the great thing today is that I don't try. But I practically killed myself trying to live up to other people's expectations of me. Where, in the family I was raised in, I was quite different, not just in how I looked, but how I am. I am not a petite little flower. I am loud, vivacious. I'm not very graceful. My adopted mom used to tell me, there's a reason we didn't call you Grace. And I have the scars to prove it, and I'm okay with that. Probably just recently, I even kind of went through an identity crisis with that. So I'm from the Pacific Northwest, so I am prepared for any kind of weather at any moment. So I dress that way. I am not a frilly girl. I never have been, except for when they tried to put the little frilly things on me. I think frilly girls are wonderful. And I went through this identity crisis and thought, well, maybe I need to be a frilly girl. Maybe I need to wear pretty shoes and pretty pants and pretty tops and wear makeup. And oh, it was exhausting. Yes. It was exhausting. More power to you. If that's what works for you and you are comfortable with that, do it. But it's not me. I like to have shoes that are comfortable and warm, and then if I get into mud, my feet won't get wet. I like to wear clothes that are comfortable. I always feel like when I have makeup on, I look like a man in drag. And so, I know the reality of it is I probably don't. I mean, I've seen pictures of myself. But, you know, if I wear mascara, it makes my eyes itch. And, different frilly things make me itch. And this has been a journey about just being comfortable with me. And that's taken a lot, because all my life I was told that I wasn't being who I was supposed to be. You're being too loud. Sit with your knees together. You know, I have a picture from when I was a child, and I remember my mom took a copy of it and threw it away, saying I ruined it. Because I'm probably 8 years old, maybe. I got a little jumper on, and of course I got my pixie cut, because I still wear a pixie, and I rock it. And I'm sitting in the front row of this family picture, and, you know, my knees are apart, and there's a little patch of white panties. How you like like me now. But the thing is my mom, you know, I do love her so much. I remember her coming up to me and saying, "You ruined this picture," and threw it away. And the pain that caused, and I know she had her own demons. She was dealing with my adopted dad, who was an alcoholic, and he would tear the house apart looking for car keys that she hid because she's trying to keep him from driving while he's drunk. So she had her own demons to deal with. And listen, just before, I took care of her until she literally took her last breath. And there came a point in time when her and I had a conversation, and it was, she told me, she said, "I will stop apologizing for being a bad mom if you'll stop apologizing for being a bad daughter." And so we did. We have no regrets. See what you guys do to me? Damn. This is why I don't like it. You know, so let's see. So I live in Maryland. I live on the banks of the Potomac River. Actually, I just ran into somebody that was at a picnic I had a couple years ago when I first got here. I live in a little mother-in-law apartment across the driveway from my 89-year-old dad. My 89-year-old dad was a flippin' rock star when he was young. My dad used to be a manager, a road manager, and a sound guy, and he was with the Mamas and the Papas and Jimi Hendrix and all that crew. It's like, dude. You know, and so we have these conversations, and he's like, "I really wish I had been there for you." And I'm like, "You know, Dad, considering the lifestyle you led, I might not be alive." I don't know if that would have worked very well. But, you know, he's so happy to have me in his life, and I am so happy to be there. And I know this is not the story that everybody has with finding their adopted parents. I know it's not. We had an issue. So, in living here and being with my dad, you know, I'm learning a lot about myself, and I'm learning to find a voice. And I can be really mouthy and really loud, except for when I really, really need to be. And so I've experienced some sexual abuse, sexual trauma, and so I have guards up. I don't always like to be touched. You know, I'm working through it continuously. So here's my dad just wanting to love me up, and we're in the kitchen one day, and he comes up behind me and he starts rubbing my shoulders. And I gotta tell you, that's a really big trigger for me, especially from a man. And I don't know him that well. I mean, I know him, but I don't know him. So he's rubbing my shoulders and I'm just freezing up, and he notices, and I said, "Yeah, I'm really uncomfortable with that, Dad." And he goes, "Oh, okay." And then, so we do whatever we're doing in the kitchen. A couple days later, kind of the same thing happens. And he starts to do that, rub my back, and he's like, and he notices I'm tensing up, and he goes, "Oh, just breathe through it." Yeah. Oh my God, all the bells and whistles just go off, and all the alarms go off. And I'm, fight or flight really just kicked in. And I excused myself, and I went back to my house, and I was ready to pack up all my shit and go. It's like, I can't do this. I cannot do this. I prayed about it. I talked to my sponsor about it. I talked to some other people about it, and I really walked through this. All in between the times of, like, how do I pack all this back up, and how do I get this in my car, and la, 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 and I'm out of here. But what happened was, you know, God always intervenes for me. Always, always, always. And a couple days later, I sat down with him at the table. I just said, I just need to talk to you. He goes, yeah, I need to talk to you too. I'm so sorry. And I said, I understand that. I really do. And I said, I am not going to fill you in on all the details of the trauma of why I'm like I am. But I just need you to understand that when I say no, or when I say I don't like that, or please don't do that, you need to listen. And he started crying, because he doesn't want me to go away. And he said, I understand. And to this day, he does understand. He shows me that in his actions. You know, before I got clean, it would be a cut and run, and I wouldn't have that conversation. I would just be, fuck you, I am so out of here. I'm so grateful to be able to be part of a fellowship and be part of a greater good of women that I can talk to that have had the same experiences that I've experienced and tell me, share with me how they walk through it, messy or not. Because, listen, tell me all about the messy. I want to hear about the messy too. You know, because I not only learn how to do things here, I also learn how not to do things here. My sponsor used to tell me, well, you can take her inventory, you know, because sometimes you just need to know what not to do. So those are part of the lessons I today get to learn. In a couple of weeks, I'll be 67 years old. And so I am just now learning how to be present for myself as a wonderful, glorious woman in recovery. Let's not kid yourselves, because the truth of the matter is I like to let my defects of character come out and play. And they do. So, and also, I can talk a good talk, okay? I do walk my recovery. My recovery is a number one important to me. Above all else, God, recovery, and then everything else. Because without God, I wouldn't have recovery. Without recovery, I wouldn't have anything else. I live a fucking blessed life. Is it okay if I swear? Yeah. Okay. Because I'm a cusser. Woo-woo. Motherfucker is my favorite. No, I do. I live a blessed life, and I've gone through some crazy stuff. One of the things I've gone through before I moved out here to Maryland, I left a marriage of 22 years. We are both in recovery. We met in recovery. We were Mr. and Mrs. N.A. in our area. Oh, God. I could not figure out what was going on, because every time, he'd go into a meeting, he'd talk about how it's better than it's ever been before. And I'm like, who the fuck is he married to? I thought he was married to me, you know. Dude, delusional. Anyway, he's got his own story. So, I left that relationship and had to walk through the consequences of all of it. My whole thing is I try to walk in God's will and stay out of my will, but when I do go and walk in my will, I have to be willing to walk in the consequences of my actions. And it's not always pretty. Hence graceful. I'm not very graceful. Anyway, so what I realized, that for the first time in 35 years, I was living on my own, by myself, no children, no man, paying my own bills, doing my own thing, and I thought I was going to lose my mind. Because of all the messages I had always received all my life, which was to women's rap, yep, which was to get married, have kids, raise a family. I mean, as a kid, my mom taught me how to grocery shop to keep on a budget, and to, like, to the point of, I would look, she would show me how, if you look at toilet paper, you can see how many squares are on a roll. No, I'm serious. And it breaks it down to what it costs per square for the roll. Literally, you can look at, next time you're shopping, look at that. She taught me, I mean, that was part of the process of learning how to be a good wife. Anyway, so here I was, 35 years later, I'd always been a mother, a wife, all that. And I finally, and this is where I am now, is finally got the opportunity to be Chris. And it was really scary, and it still is sometimes. Right now, it's really good. I'm really in a good spot. You caught me on a good day, okay? Because sometimes it's not so good. Sometimes I think I need to have a man in my life where I know that I don't, but I think I do. The old messages come back. I'm nothing without someone by my side. If you watch any fucking movie, if you listen to any goddamn song, you make me complete. I'm nothing without you. And it's like, God, how programmed do we have to be? And I'm not saying anything about love, anything bad about anybody being in relationships, because really, I want to be in a loving, caring relationship with someone someday. But if I pick it, you know, my picker still be broke, babe. My picker still be broke. So I'm letting God do the picking. And so far, he hasn't found anything good enough. So I'm just kind of kicking back and waiting and, you know, letting the flies come to honey and all that stuff. I don't know. You know, I say weird shit. I have a home group. My home group is Stepping in Traditions and Concepts. And I have never felt so welcome. Well, maybe when I came to your home group. Yeah. They welcome me so much. And that's why I stay there. We're out in kind of the middle of nowhere on a Sunday night. So if you're ever in Pomfret, Maryland, come on down. Look it up on the map. Starts at 7:30. Coffee's always on. But they're good people. And we study the concepts. We study the traditions. What a concept for people. You know, when I got here, you guys were all doing it wrong, of course, because I came from, you know, Washington State. You guys don't know how to do it right here, so I'll tell y'all how to do it right if you want. Well, you're welcome. Yeah, anytime. And actually, you know, I learned a lot about myself with that, is that everybody has the opportunity to recover at their own level, their own speed. I think somebody talked about it, people have been talking about it in speakers meetings this weekend. And for me, what I learned about myself was that Narcotics Anonymous is so important to who I am and my life today, that if I think you're trying to change it, then I'm going to fucking protect it. But I had to let that go a bit, you know. You're going to recover with what works for you. I know what works for me. And I, like others, I came into recovery with old school people. And it was sit down, shut up, put the cotton, you know, in your mouth, take it out of your ears. And the one thing that I still have a hard time accepting, and I'm going to say this here, do with it as you wish, that when we do the readings and people do the boing and all that. So when I got here, I remember the first convention I ever went to, the whole crowd did that. And a much respected predecessor got up onto the podium and schooled us and told us, that was disrespectful to our readings,
yes,
and to please stop. And that still today is my belief, that it is disrespectful to our readings. I can't tell you what to do. You got to make your own decision. But that's just where I come from, you know. So, stop it.
Yes.
Please. What else? What else did I forget? Today I am, I'm an artist, in case you didn't know. It's taken me a long time to say that. To say that I'm an artist. I do art. I don't make a living at it because I don't like to sell it, because I don't think anybody will buy it. So I give it away. Basically, I just give it away. But what I do, and it's kind of reflective of who I am, I take broken dishes and I make mosaics. So I take something broken and I make something beautiful with it. So I love doing it. You know, my dad has this big old garage across the driveway, and he's got his little cars that he works on. He collects MGs. So he's got those, and then I get the loft. And I got the tools. I got a grinder. I got a saw, a big old diamond saw to cut glass for Christmas. I go up there, and I get dirty and grubby, and I make these things. And I don't care if anybody likes them or not. I like them. They're my meditation. So if you do something that you like, and you don't know if anybody else likes it, it doesn't matter. If it makes you happy, that's what matters. And it makes me happy. You know? So I do art. I'm an artist, in case you couldn't tell. I play the ukulele badly. Very badly. You know, I have to have everything right in front of me. And I go once a month with my dad to a ukulele jam with other people and pretend I know what I'm doing. But I go because of him. I get to be present for my dad. Yeah. He, like I said, he's 89 years old, and we get to build this relationship, and I get to learn how to interact with someone, even when it's not comfortable. And I get to learn that from him today, which I'm so grateful for. So grateful for. I walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and all my survival skills became my character defects. And so throughout my time here, I get to stumble. And I get to practice. That's kind of like, I look at it as the fellowship is like my practice field, where I get to learn skills, and then I get to practice using them on you guys. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I can make a mess, but I'm really, really good at not making messes anymore because I hate to make amends. And so if I'm thinking, well, I could say this, but, you know, you're going to have to make amends later. And it's like, nah, I don't want to make amends. So I'm not going to say it. I don't know how much time I have. I just, go with the hell. All right. I'm not really sure what else to say. Like, this time right now has been about me being single and not pulling, just because I want someone in my life, not just going out and getting someone in my life. Just because it's been learning to have conversations with men. So I have men friends. Get out of town. There is no sex. It's purely platonic. I've got a few of them. A couple in Washington. Well, I mean, it's a big deal for me because I could never be friends. I mean, if you're a guy and you looked at me as like, hey, how you doing? Yeah. What did I used to bring on a first date? My U-Haul, you know. And And I don't have to do that anymore. But I have a couple friends, a couple male friends, like one guy, he's the best. He likes to travel. He likes to drive. So we go on vacations together. We stay in the same room, but separate beds. We go, like, so in May, I turned 30. We're going to meet in, like, South Dakota. He's in Seattle. We're going to meet in South Dakota. We're going to rent a car. We're going to drive to Yellowstone and Mount Rushmore and all those things. And then we're driving up to Washington State to a convention. So I get to see my sponsor and celebrate my 30th with my sponsor. Aww. So he's that kind of guy. We split the bills. We did it last year, only we both flew into Arizona and we did Sedona and all that. I feel safe, secure, you know, as far as I'm not by myself. But he's just a good guy, and everybody's like, well, why aren't you guys boyfriend and girlfriend? It's like, well, because that's not the relationship. What I learned was I can be in a relationship and I don't have to take my pants down. I don't have to take my boobs out. I don't have to do any of that. I can. A relationship is just a friendship. We relate to each other. I have another friend that lives in Idaho. We do the same kind of thing. He likes to, okay. So he collects International Harvester stuff, like the vehicles, which is the Scout and the big vehicles, but they also made refrigerators in the 50s. He collects those and refurbishes them and resells them. Well, he found out that you can go to Canada and get them really cheap, find them really cheap. So I'll fly into Spokane, he'll pick me up, we'll have a trailer on the back of the truck, and we'll drive around and go get these refrigerators. We stay in separate rooms. He's not comfortable with the same room, which is fine. I pay for my stuff, he pays for his stuff. We talk quite a bit. We have intellectual conversations about Narcotics Anonymous, religion, people. We talk shit. He makes me laugh. But this is the relationship we have. He's not my boyfriend. I'm not his girlfriend, and that's okay. We are good friends. I have learned that I don't have to fuck somebody to have them like me. I don't have to fuck somebody to have them like me. But what I do know is that if you need to fuck somebody up, everybody up in Washington State, it's I-5. If you have to fuck somebody up and down, everybody up and down I-5, up and back, if that's what you have to do, that's fine. But when you get to the point where it's not working for you anymore, stop. When you're thinking you're a piece of shit because you can't stop doing it, call your sponsor. Mm-hmm. Call your girlfriends. When you're hating yourself because of the behavior you're doing, do something else, babe. Do something else. Because the reality of it is, there's no reason, really, really no reason. No matter what people have told us all our lives, I'm too brown, I'm too tall, I'm too loud, I'm too this, I'm too fat, I'm too that. Listen, fuck them if they can't take a joke. Not literally, okay? We were just talking. We were just talking about that, okay? I mean, you can. Listen, you, me, everybody is so fucking worthy of nothing but good, but it starts with you. You're the one that has to start being good to you, even if it's a little bit at a time, because that's how it started for me. For me, I had to stop eating incorrectly. I put down the spoon and picked up the fork when I walked into the rooms. I had to learn how to feed myself other than with food porn. You know, that there's some of that food looks mighty good. But the hate I have for myself after I eat it is not good for me. So I have to learn to take care. I had to, and I continue to, learn how to take care of myself in a way that's good for me, that promotes good health, that promotes love for me. Because I hope I get it right. Because RuPaul, she knows how to say it. If you can't love yourself, how the fuck are you going to love anybody else? Because it's true. It's so true. And I spent a lot of time hating myself for what I was told I didn't live up to. I'm the one that decides what I do and do not live up to anymore. I'm the one that decides that. And I'm the one that says that I need to do better. If I don't like where I'm at, I'm the one that has to make the changes to do something different. I am not a victim anymore. No more. I'm not a victim of men. Let me say that again. I am not a victim of men. I am not a victim. The only way I can do any of that, any of this talk I have, and it's a walk that I have, is with a higher power. That's the only way. Early on when I was single and I moved to Maryland, I was so fucking lonely. And I wanted to call my ex. It was me calling my God and saying, I just don't want to do it. I know it's not right. I know it's not going to be good for me. Help me, God. Just help me, God. My God did. My God never lets me down. Never. And that's crazy because I let my God down a lot, I think. I shouldn't say that because I don't think my God looks at me like that. I let myself down sometimes. But I'm getting better. Because I really do know that I'm worthy of nothing but greatness. My definition of greatness is different from yours, probably. Greatness for me is, just being a good person, being able to be kind. I haven't always been a kind person. And one of the things people mistake about me is, I have some PTSD and I have some shyness. I'm a slow burn kind of girl, kind of thing. You know, I can act like I'm shy. And then as I get to know you more, it kind of opens up more. But I need to, it just takes me a minute. So, I forgot where I was going with that, but might be early onset of Alzheimer's. All I know is that I want to be kind, I want to be loving, I want to meet you where you're at. I know that I need to look at people and understand that everybody's coming from somewhere different, and I don't know what's going on for them today. I really don't. And so I need to be mindful of that when I'm dealing with people and not be such a bitch sometimes. Is that all right? Okay. All right. I just check in. That's all I ever wanted to do and be was a good girl, so to speak. And that's all I want to be now is I want to be a good person. I want to walk the walk. I want to be kind when I'm at the grocery store and people in front of me are being assholes. And I go up to, the clerk and it's like, it's okay, sis. Come on. You got this. I want to be an encourager, not a discourager. People did that for me. And here I am 30 years later. You know, and one of the women that she spoke last year as one of the main speakers, Brenda B., she's always been an encourager for me since I walked into the rooms. That's what's so crazy. And, I've known Brenda my whole recovery. And another friend of ours today, she's 49. Literally, she's got 49 years clean. We called her, FaceTimed her yesterday and wished her congratulations. And we're able to, these are women that have made such a difference in my life and is why I'm still here. So we're sisters. You know, I'm the ugly stepsister sometimes, but I'm still your sister, okay? You still gotta love me. But be kind to one another. Have some acceptance, some empathy, some patience, some understanding, even when you don't want to. So, love one another. Be there for one another. That's all I got. Thanks for listening.